Hello and welcome to the Journeys with PDA Coffee Chat podcast, where we seek community connection and co-regulation while chatting about all things PDA. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Journeys with PDA Coffee Chat podcast. I'm Heather.
And I'm Carissa.
And today we are going to be talking about autistic inertia.
Yes. So autistic inertia is kind of a phrase that I learned a couple years ago and have just kind of been fascinated about it and really curious how it impacts not just all autistic people or neurodivergent people, but also how does it impact PDA? Mm-hmm. And I think it plays a huge part. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that anyone is talking about. So
very true. Very, very true. And I'm glad you put in not just autistic inertia, but also neurodivergent inertia.
Yes, because there's not a ton of research, a little bit. I was able to find, I think, two research articles, but that was really it. But there seems to be, it's also a part of ADHD, mm-hmm. and it plays a big part, I think, in all human beings. It's this big part of being a person, but it's also really impactful with autistic brains and differently wired brains and the ADHD brain. And I think the inertia really plays a huge part in PDA avoidance. Mm-hmm. And so if we have no idea or no concept about autistic inertia, then I really feel like we're kind of lacking a piece or lacking a clue to PDA. So, okay, I got a couple notes here, so I don't
So
I don't get too off track.
Yeah, because we never do that. So I'm glad you brought the notes today.
Yeah. So autistic inertia is like the phrase correlates to Newton's first law, which is if a body is at rest or moving at a constant speed in a straight line, it will remain at rest or keep moving. And so that's where the phrase inertia comes from, because autistic people, like when we're going, we like to just keep on going and kind of stay going. If we're at rest, we stay at rest. Mm-hmm. And so there's also that phrase, like a body in motion stays in motion. Like if you're up and going and you're kind of doing, then you're going to keep going.
Yep.
So, inertia is very much, intertwined with monotropism, which are special interests. And that's something that, we have talked about before, because mm-hmm. that plays a huge part in being autistic. So monotropism, special interests, you kind of get in that zone. Right. And it feels super fantastic. And so you don't really want to switch out. So, you know, and there's not any good research on how strongly special interest and monotropism, plays into, you know, affecting your inertia and, your ability to transition between mm-hmm. tasks.
And it's very difficult. It's difficult. Those transitions
are hard, and they can also be very frustrating, and they can be painful.
Yeah. So that's something that I think is so important to bring, like, to everyone's attention, is when you are trying to make or force someone to transition, when they're in their flow or in mm-hmm. their lane, it's like a literal hurt. Like, it hurts mm-hmm. To try to switch over. And so with PDA, we, like, if you're saying, hey, put your shoes on, we know that that is a direct demand. We know that that is going to create anxiety. So we know that there's going to be avoidance. And so my point is, how much of that anxiety and that avoidance is due to inertia and, mm-hmm. and that difficulty with, okay, like, I'm doing this thing, and maybe I'm watching my video, maybe I'm doing a video game or a puzzle, and you suddenly, like, try to jolt me out of my focus to do something, especially with PDA, when they're like, I don't actually care about shoes. So, you know, like, that's going to contribute, I think, to the avoidance in mm-hmm. in that it doesn't feel good when you jerk me out of what I'm doing. Which then also causes a lot of frustration.
When you're a child and you don't understand that part that is part of you, it's very, very, again, it's uncomfortable, but it's also very frustrating because, you know, as a child, there's not a lot of things that you have control over. And if somebody doesn't understand PDA or they don't understand inertia, to have somebody jolt them out of that, their flow state, is extremely frustrating. And in fact, it's something that I didn't understand that was happening to me until really just maybe 2 years ago. Like, why is it? And I'm not PDA, but I am diagnosed ADHD and I identify as autistic. But when I personally get started on a task, it's highly annoying to me. And that's the only way I can put it. It's annoying to me when I have to stop and I have to turn my direction to something else and my energy to something else, my focus to something else. And it's very difficult for me, or even impossible for me, to return to the original task. So if I'm an adult and I can understand that, I can't even imagine what it is like to have that happen when you're a child.
Absolutely. And so that's why I'm like, we have to talk about mm-hmm. inertia, because that's, I think that also plays into when you try to drag someone else out of their flow state. It's so annoying. It's very, very frustrating. And like, honestly, like, in, like, even in me, when I am in that flow state and I am doing something, and my, even like my kids or my husband, if it's a text message and it interrupts me, I'm almost angry.
Yeah.
And that's when I get really frustrated and, you know, you spout off and you kind of say things, you know, that you don't mean, like, why are you bothering me?
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of look at it for a parenting perspective, So you just asked your child to stop what they're doing, put on some shoes, and really what you have done is interfered in that flow state. And so when they yell and scream at you, then to me, yes, that is a reasonable reaction.
Right. And then, you know, if there are caregivers who are not quite understanding, first of all, of, you know, PDA or what this inertia is and flow state, you know, there's probably going to be repercussions, you know, when a child gets upset and spouts off, or, you know, they have an external response to you asking them to put their shoes on. And it's really unfair, because you are asking their brains to do something that is very, very difficult for their brains to do.
Yes. Yes. And that is one of the pieces that I want people to hear and understand, that this has to do with how their brain is wired and how their brain works. This isn't about being naughty or defiant or rude, disrespectful, all those things that we hear all of the time. Is you are interrupting the working of their brain. And the other part of inertia where I think it really, really boils up that frustration is when you are jerked out of that flow state, you can't get back in. Mm-mm. And you can't re-engage in what you're doing. So if I'm working, I'm super, super focused, and I get interrupted, especially if I have to get up and move my body.
Yes.
Then I'm whatever I'm doing, it's done. It's over. I won't put my,
for me, yes. And for me, it's if I have to stop moving my body.
Right.
If I have to stop. It's you don't understand. If I have to stop doing what I'm doing, I cannot start back.
So that creates huge frustration. And think about a child, you interrupted them, and that doesn't feel good. But now they're frustrated, because even if you walked away and you're leaving them alone, they can't get back. They can't get back to that thing. And then they are going to be really grumpy and really frustrated. And the thing is there's not a fix necessarily to that. So once it's broke.
Right. Right. And you add on top of that executive functioning difficulties. It's just, it's a recipe for disaster. I mean, it really is. It's so impactful.
Absolutely. And so with the tiny bit of research that's been done and, these research articles, were autistic led. And, so in that, we know that autistic inertia impacts every aspect of our life, all day, every day. So it's not I stayed up late and I'm tired today, so I can't get going.
Mm-hmm.
It comes into play all of the time with everything. And I think that is an important piece to realize, because it's not about being lazy.
Right.
It's like your brain, you know, it feels stuck. So inertia is a lot about feeling like stuck.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of, you know, I see with like my kids, with autistic kids, it's always that first step to the thing. And so I think that also is hugely impactful with PDA, because if you don't have that inner like drive,
mm-hmm.
that motivation to get going, and then you add in executive functioning difficulties, and maybe you don't even know what step one is, then you know that kid is going to be so anxious, and so then they're going to avoid the whole thing. And so a great example is my daughter and cleaning her room, and so she can't do it, and it's really a can't, not mm-hmm. won't. She cannot do it because she can't find that first step. And because she can't find the first step, then you get into avoidance. And so it just will not happen. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, I'm like, you have to get this space cleared up. She's like, you know, that's where you're going to have that big conflict. And so we have found, if either me or my husband, if we go, hey, like, I can see you kind of have a mess happening, can we come and help you out? And she is like, yes, because she doesn't like it. She doesn't like the situation mm-hmm. being scattered and messy. But she needs us to come alongside her, very gentle, very patient. And we take that first step
mm-hmm.
and she can see, and she's just kind of there. We're not giving her directions. It's more like we have to model mm-hmm. what the first step is. So when we engage kind of alongside her, and it's like, you know, first I'm just going to pick up the trash. But I'm just there. I'm doing it, right? Not giving instructions, mm-hmm. not do this, do that. She might just be like watching TikTok. But what will happen is I help to ignite that first step in her, and then she can start to engage.
Mm-hmm. She builds the momentum. You get the momentum started.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's getting that momentum started. But it also has to do with, like, you know, that's where also like the low demand comes in. So maybe room cleaning is an inertia problem. But if I come in hollering demands, we're going to have a super explosive situation because inertia is stopping her from even knowing that first mm-hmm. step. And then she's frustrated. And, you know, and then if I react with frustration, that's where you lead into that big meltdown.
Mm-hmm. And can you imagine, you know, I'm just picturing one thing that popped into my head. Somebody who is in that autistic flow state at school, and, you know, there are hard stops and hard starts in school. And if you don't have the environment that would support, you know, first the understanding that what inertia is, and then have that support and the flexibility, you know, along with being demand avoidant, you know, we can start to really, really understand why school can be so incredibly difficult for our community.
Absolutely. So I think inertia does play a huge part in difficulties at school. Mm-hmm. And that, and it's going to create that demand avoidance. Because one, you're not in control of your mm-hmm. environment, but two, you're like, I really like doing this. Mm-hmm. And like, it feels good. Mm-hmm. I feel happy. I feel calm. And then a super loud bell goes off and you are required to automatically stop and switch over. Mm-hmm. And and we hear a lot, you know, all the time, but at school, they're having difficulty with transitions.
You're right. Yeah. They don't like those transitions.
And it's like, yeah, it's almost like the autistic brain, ADHD brain, it's really not wired to make those quick transitions. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have that student who now they're kind of in distress because they had to like break their flow. But they also have the pressure of people around them because it's like, well, now you have to hurry. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to be late. And now there's discipline consequences for yes. being tardy. And mm-hmm. so then, you know, all of these things start to really build up. And mm-hmm. with a PDAer, then they're just like, I can't handle it at all.
Yep. Right.
So we've kind of really dug into like what inertia looks like in life. So like you can't move on to a different task. It's transitions, it's switching. It feels so icky, right? So that's kind of like that experience of what inertia is. And so, now let's kind of switch over and talk about, now you know what inertia is, what are the things that you can do to be respectful of it and mm-hmm. to support either yourself, like this is so much also not only just a parenting issue or a school issue, you know, it's at home. It's how do you support and respect your partner, your mm-hmm. spouse? How do you support yourself in it? And so that's kind of that next key piece.
Mm-hmm. And so, I really like the way you use the word respect. Because it is respect. It, yes. And along with respect, there's also got to be that understanding of what it is. And yeah.
Yeah. Respect, compassion, and patience, which I feel like, it seems really funny to me when we talk about like autistic inertia or burnout or low demand and PDA, sensory issues, like all of this stuff. It's funny to me that really the first step in supporting all of this is be compassionate, be empathetic, and be patient. And if you could do that. I mean, it seems like, why are we not?
We could solve world peace.
why is this not, why isn't this our baseline yeah. of approach to
of humanity, right? Our baseline for humanity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Be empathetic, you know, like be patient. And I think that's so important with our kids, especially with PDA. Be patient, slow down, give them time, allow flexibility, like let them finish the video. Let them finish the level of their game. And it's, you're not, it's not like you're wasting time or you're not spoiling them. You're being respectful of how their brain works. It, because if you're like, stop this right now, it hurts.
It does.
It's gonna make them angry. And I say that from my personal experience.
And I just I've gotta ask you this. While you're talking about this, are you, so let me put it this way. When I'm listening to you talk about this, I am actually experiencing discomfort in my body when you are describing what it feels like, because that's it. And so I'm kind of wondering if you're having the same kind of experience while you're talking about it. I'm thinking about different ways how this happens to me. And even though it's not happening right now, we're just talking about it, I am having a physical reaction to what we are talking about. And it's like your body doesn't forget, right? So
yes, yeah. Yes. And I can feel that.
Yeah.
I can feel it in me.
And I can see it. And I know that we have more people that listen to our podcast, and don't necessarily watch us on YouTube. But I can just pick it up. I mean, the body language as you're talking about it, it's passion, but it's also, I can see that discomfort. Like it's that, I can see that.
Yes. And so it's something that I am really passionate mm-hmm. about, because it causes so much discomfort mm-hmm. in the person. And so, I see that a child, and even looking back in my childhood, as a child, when you are pulled out of your flow state, or you're stuck and you can't find the first step, it's so painful and uncomfortable in yourself. And you're like, why can't I do this? Or why can't I get back on track? But what happens is the external perspective is more like that child is being naughty. Mm-hmm. And then consequences and discipline is put into place. Mm-hmm. And so you can't use discipline to alter somebody's inertia. And mm-hmm. that is where I'm really passionate about. And as soon as I started to see that in my kids, and so inertia is really, really difficult for my younger child. And it plays into like that processing speed as well. And once I realized how much frustration and pain he was in because I was breaking his flow. And that can even be asking a question like, are you hungry? Like the pain in him. And that's when it clicked in me. And I was like, I'm actually inflicting pain mm-hmm. and discomfort on him. And if I can slow down and pause and sort of observe, like, where is my child at in their flow? If I look at my husband, like, what is he doing right now? Like, where is he at in his flow? Is this an okay time to approach him? Or is this going to really mess up his flow and he's going to be irritated because now he can't get back in and he's frustrated and he was doing the thing. So, being observant of the, of people around you, where are they at in their flow? Is there a less obtrusive way that you could, you know, if you have to interact with them? So that's just bring them the snack, you know, yeah. They want it, they'll eat it.
Yep. And respect their, if they tell you this is not a good time or no, they can't do this. No, it's, you know, respect that and believe them. Believe them.
And then just remove yourself. Mm-hmm. Like there's no follow-up questions. It's one of the big things we talk about with PDA all the time is respect their no.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
So if they tell you no, like it's no, like they're not able to do that. And maybe it's inertia. Like they are not able to switch over to something else. Or if they answer your question right now, they're going to lose track of what they were thinking.
Yes.
Yep. So some of the things, you know, be patient, slow down, observe where the person is at in their flow. But some of the things that can be really helpful, and you have to be super careful how you phrase or word this with a PDA, but really with anyone, is it's trying to give advance notice. So that could be, you know, at lunchtime, letting my son know, hey, tonight is out school night. So that allows him to know, okay, I have this thing that I'm going to do. So what kind of flow do I want to get in prior to that? So I'm not going to dive deep into this or that. Or because his out school is Minecraft. And so then maybe he goes, oh, you know what? I actually have a big Minecraft build project that I want to do prior to my class. So I'm going to dive into that super deep, and he's not doing anything else. So like reading, you know, where he's at with that. But that's that advance. If I can give some advance notice, then it allows the person to sort of decide how I want to flow and you know, how I want my engagement to be.
Mm-hmm. And you know, as an adult that does the same thing, it also allows me personally to know, you know, how many, you know, we talk about spoon theory, and if we, you know, if we talk about spoon theory, and it allows me to know how much time I can be in my flow state versus how many spoons I have and how many spoons I'm going to need for my next task. You know, just being cognizant of that helps me be able to tackle the tasks that I have to do for the day. So there's just a lot of tentacles that go out and touch everything. It's not something where we would say, okay, we're having issues here because it's autistic inertia. Now we're having this issue here because, oh, it's spoon theory. Okay, we just don't have the spoons. Oh, we're having this issue because it's an executive functioning thing. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be all three at the same time.
Yes. Yes. And realizing that it is very complex and it's all of these pieces together.
Mm-hmm. And it all comes in all three of those situations. It comes to when we want to look at how we are going to support our family member or our child. It is patience, compassion, respect. It's all of those things, because, you know, I grew up in which I see now is a neurodivergent household. And I thought that was normal. Like, I didn't realize that we functioned as a family in not the most typical of ways, or I should say normative of ways, right? And when you get into relationships that are outside of your immediate family and you start having your own family with whom, you know, the makeup may not be completely everybody's neurodivergent, you expect your partner to just kind of know things, right? Like, understand it, know it, just as neurotypical people expect neurodivergent people to know those norms. And, you know, just having communication between, you know, two human beings, it so that there is understanding, that it's like, if, you know, in my personal life, it's like, if I get up and I'm an early riser, my husband is not an early riser. I go to bed early. My husband does not go to bed early. But when I get up, I'm one of these people that, like, I hit the ground running and I need to get through all of my tasks, because if I stop, I'm done. Like, I'm done. And so when I get interrupted in the course of doing those tasks, then it can cause, you know, before we understood what this was and why this was, you know, there was a lot of friction. Like, why do you have to be so, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to do this. It's okay. And I'm like, well, yeah, it is. You're right. You know, I deserve it, but you don't understand. I will do that after X, Y, and Z is accomplished. So if as an adult, it's difficult to find those conversations and to be able to express that, can you imagine how difficult it is if you are a child?
Oh, absolutely. So much. And so that also is a great example of, like, you can't stop what you're doing and go pee.
Yeah.
You can't stop what you're doing and go sit down and eat, you know, make the food. You can't stop. You can't get out of that flow because you just can't get back. And so that, like, one of the big things about inertia is people cannot stop, or they're so engrossed, they kind of lose track of time, mm-hmm. so that they don't realize that they haven't eaten in hours, or they don't realize that they haven't gotten up to go pee. That was a big one with my son, is he would be so deep in his flow state that he wouldn't realize that he needed to go pee. Mm-hmm. And so what would happen is he would wait way too long. And then it was like this emergency rush. And sometimes he wouldn't make it on time. And then he feels terrible about himself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, it wasn't within, like, his mental capacity or his power to be able to stop. And so he and I had to discuss it. Like, this is hard, you know, this is a tough thing to switch over, take a pee break. And so I had to kind of find, like, what is this gentle way that I can help him make sure that he's, you know, stopping to go pee, that's not going to mess up his flow so much that he can't get back. And so what we did is, I would stop at the door of his room. I didn't come in, and I would just say, do you need to take care of your body? And if he didn't respond back, you know, then I left, but knew that I needed to circle back. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that he was ignoring me. It wasn't that he didn't hear me. It was like he was in the flow state and could not even respond. And so sometimes before I would even circle back, I would hear him get up and go. So he received that reminder and then was able to keep flowing until he felt okay to stop, run, take the break, and come right back in. And so the very gentle reminders and having the communication of, you know, how are you going to maybe signal that mm-hmm. other person? If I came all the way into his room, it would destroy the flow. And then he would probably be really irritated, you know? So staying outside his room, you know, our key phrase, that was how I could respect his flow, but also help him take care of his body.
Mm-hmm. Goes back to that respect.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's sort of this idea of children, because they're young, don't need the same like human respect mm-hmm. that adults think they should have. And so I think that sometimes adults and parents talk to kids in ways that they would never talk to other adults.
Right.
And that you can actually be very compassionate and respectful to a child. And that's not spoiling them.
Right.
And it really, this is sort of like, I'm sort of like getting off course, but it's an important piece as well, is that when you show compassion and respect for your child, it models that so that they then understand how to show respect and compassion mm-hmm. for others. And so that's going to be a big piece of inertia. And so one of the things that I say to my daughter is, I have told her, if my eyeballs are looking at my laptop screen and my fingers are moving on the keyboard, that is a signal to not talk to me. And you have to just stand and wait. And so that's a tough one, because she's PDA and waiting is a demand, and she, you know, like it's urgent. But by letting her know, this is what it looks like when I need another minute, that she might not get it every single time, but it's how you're going to communicate, this is how I need you to respect me. And then it also allows me, when she does come in and she is quiet and she is standing there, that's like that gentle reminder to me, okay, she needs me, but she's also being respectful of my flow. So it's so much easier. I can finish that sentence and then I can stop and give her my full attention. And I'm not irritated, you know, because I wasn't jerked out of my flow. And I can give her the attention she needs. Chances are, if I have to get up out of my chair, I probably can't get back to what I was doing. But because that was such a respectful and gentle approach to pulling me out of my flow, I'm not going to feel really aggravated or mm-hmm. upset.
And it's just fascinating to me that like it just this part of being just feels so normal to me that it's just it's also fascinating for me to think that neurotypicals don't experience these kinds of things at the same way that we do. Like it's just that part fascinates me as well. Like when we, you know, just like it just fascinates me.
Yes, because if you're autistic, whether you know it or not, you kind of don't realize your experience through mm-hmm. life is not the same as everyone else. And so you, somebody, might not experience this kind of inertia, but their child does. And so there's mm-hmm. that disconnect in the two people's experience. And so if you're not experiencing inertia in that way, having the understanding that this is absolutely, completely real. Mm-hmm. This is a real experience. It's very valid and it's difficult. So we need everyone to hear that, whether you experience it personally or not. There are people around you that are, and especially I feel like our PDAers.
Mm-hmm. Absolute. Yes. Yes.
If you're not like honing in on where they're at, as far as like a flow state and inertia, that I think is a huge contributor to increasing anxiety and making demands even more difficult. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the more difficult it's going to be to suss it all out.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And just being autistic and PDA, it's, you know, we talk about it's dynamic. There's all mm-hmm. these different pieces. And so, you know, my hope is that we've just given you one more piece. It's not going to solve all your problems. It's not going to, you know, it's not like now you can eliminate it and you're like, check.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Right? Like, and all we can do.
I'd go to my husband with a checklist to go, honey, this is how we eliminate these things in Heather world.
Yes.
cross it off.
Right? Like, it's not going to solve all of your problems, but if you can incorporate it in mm-hmm. to the dynamicness, yes. Then it just broadens your understanding, and it makes it so much easier to have compassion for why a child is super frustrated.
And as an adult, you know, as an adult, does it mean that my spouse or even as a parent, does that mean that you can't be frustrated as well because it's difficult? You know, that's just part of the human experience and being in relationships with people. And it's like, yes, I mean, the human experience means you may be frustrated because your person is in this flow state. Maybe you have to get to the doctor's office.
Right.
Maybe, you know, and understanding that, you know, yes, it's being frustrated is perfectly valid. It's a valid feeling. But you go the next step and realizing, yes, I'm frustrated. However, I know this is not something that we can overcome. So let's figure out the best way to support it.
Right. Or it's not an intentional.
Correct. Yes.
You know, it's not, it's, behavior.
It's, yep. Yes.
It's, so yeah, like you might feel frustrated because you have to get to that appointment on time. And like the doctor's office, that window of how late you can be is really small. And then they're like, oh yeah, you're a no-show and no-show fee. And if you have three no-shows, don't come back to our office, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a big pressure to put on to the parent. But realizing that inertia is part of this child not being able to get ready to go.
And so perhaps like what you had said before, when your son, when he has out school, you let him know around lunchtime, hey, we have out school later on. That way it allows him to decide how many spoons he's going to need and how deep into a flow state and what kind of flow state he's going to want to go into.
Right.
And because and- you've built that trust, you've built that relationship and with him. And, you know, it falls into that doctor's office, you know, scenario as well. We understand that we don't live in a vacuum. You know, there are things we have to do outside our four walls. But it's offering the support along the way.
Right.
So that when you understand their flow state, and you know you have a hard stop at a certain time, it will make it easier on your child, and it will make it easier on you, and it will make it easier on your bank account because you're not having to pay those cancellation fees or those no-show fees.
Right, right. And you know, if you can go, okay, I know that we're going to have some inertia. I know we have to be in the car at this time. So, you know, kind of that pre-planning, is important, but also how can you model or help that person get to that first step of getting ready to go? So with PDA, we talk about all the time, you're not going to say, go get your shoes and put them on. They're like, oh, you know, like they can't. but that's sort of same with inertia. So maybe what happens is I'm going to get my son's shoes. I'm going to get my shoes. I'm going to bring his shoes to him wherever he is and whatever he's doing. And then I'm going to put my shoes on next to him. And maybe we are only talking about Minecraft. But that kind of like parallel is going to help him find that first step, and to get going in that first step. And then it might be, well, if step one is putting the shoes on, and step two is tying them, maybe I'll do step two for him and I'll tie them. And that's going to make this transition easier. So breaking down the steps to that transition is going to be really helpful in eliminating some of that frustration.
Right.
And so maybe he, you know, he puts the shoes on, I tie them, and I just throw his coat in the car, and he walks to the car with his iPad, and oh, goodness, fireworks for me.
Yay! That was such a great idea.
Yes. So maybe he finishes up in the car on the way to the doctor's office. So that when it's time to walk in, he's already kind of finished up what he needed. And it's that really smooth, very slow, very gentle transition over to this other thing.
And if he hasn't finished up, is the world going to end if he takes the iPad into the doctor's office with him? No, it is not going to end.
Right.
You know, it's an accommodation.
Right. However, for him, he feels like the world is going to end if he cannot finish up that thing.
Right. Correct. Yes. Which is why you let him go in with the device.
And so that's where you have to have some flexibility mm-hmm. in how you're going to, you know, approach transitions and inertia, you know, whether it's, we have to leave the house, we have to take a shower, it's time to eat dinner. You have to just incorporate that flexibility in. So, let them finish the level, let them finish the video, let them finish the project, and help them find that first step.
Right.
Can you just do the first step for them so that they then can get that momentum to do whatever the thing is?
So, Carissa, if somebody wants to learn more about autistic inertia, where can they find more information?
So we, on the Journeys with PDA website, have a one-page, really easy to download, print, and share, read, put on the refrigerator, whatever it is you want to do. I have a really great resource document that I created so that you can kind of dig into it. And then I do have the links, which will be included in the description, to the really great autistic-led research articles. And I really emphasize autistic-led. These were put together and led by autistic people so that they're sharing their actual experience, which is really important to me.
And if you would like to know more about pathological demand avoidance, you can find more information on the same website, journeyswithpda.com. You can find us on Facebook, Journeys with PDA. We are on Instagram. And you can always email us at journeyswithpda@gmail.com.
Yes. So, Heather, thanks for letting me share about autistic inertia, because it means so much to me. So,
and thank you for sharing it with the community and the world.